What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Sings, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes of a pretty meh WrestleMania build, hurtling towards the final shows. I'm recording this on the Thursday, so which means I've got like, to do a really quick edit on the Friday to get it all out, but I'm kind of happy that I did leave it a day. Jesus Christ, the PR day that WWE has had today. Just the Social Suplex chat with just the other guys just over the course of the day, just, oh my god. Just from like, it almost seemed like from one thing to the next. Some of them where WWE won't see them as an issue. For example, like Stephanie McMahon doing her podcast thing in the very first episode with Dana White. So we're just throwing around the questions that we'd ask with that type of thing. But very much a kind of response from it. Got the Street Profits going on a podcast, being directly asked by, I think it was Cameron who he was on with, and just being directly asked, well, if you're the tag team champions, why aren't you on the WrestleMania show? Basically asking two black champions why they're not on the WrestleMania card, where there are no black men on the card. Three black wrestlers, and there is the big deal about Jade Cargill and Naomi being the first women's singles match that's not for a title ever at WrestleMania, and they are two black women as well, which is like, that's a big deal. Part of me expected them to not even mention the black part, it's just going to be the women part, because you know, certain political climate in America right now, you don't want to get it be labelled by the Trump side. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, come on guys. Within WWE there's a lot of political undercurrent. It's just, it feels like every single week there's something right wing that's present in there, whilst I watch AEW and there's nothing. They're just telling their stories, they're just getting on with their lives or whatever. WWE, there's seemingly every single week something right-wing appears. This week it wasn't on the show. It's here in the PR build. It's kind of just everywhere. Because the final bit I've not talked about is Roman Reigns doing an interview with Vanity Fair. He talked about supporting Trump. Oh yeah, yeah. They're talking about anything but WrestleMania. Even the Vince stuff. I feel like Trump's doing a good job. Like, no, Roman. Don't say this shit. For God's sake. Like, oh, it's a nightmare of a PR day. Where a PR person would recommend not saying anything on these kind of matters and things. But it was like, nah. An awful PR day. For WWE, just, it felt like it was just one thing after the other, and yeah, which was hilarious, as it seemed like another thing was coming through. Yeah, but also the rating stuff has come out for WWE, where that another thing from Thursday, where they're averaging 2.8 million for the Raw Netflix shows. That's worldwide, that's including my figure. I'm trying to remember the number, I think that meant they were down like 35% from their debut, which means it's basically the same repeated thing from before, where they get the big debut number, then it just shrinks, and over the course of time starts to continue to shrink. So it just happens that this WrestleMania kind of air build has happened around the exact same time that AEW's seen an upswing, and they've done a really good job now to start to present the kind of stories that fans are reacting to really, really well, and they hit a really strong dynamite this week as well, which makes sense to do it on this week of all weeks too. But over the course of this build, as it's progressed, I've become more and more convinced that the show itself is going to deliver some fun matches. I can't say like amazing 5-star classics, that's not what WWE go for, and WrestleMania is a spectacle show. If you're going to get a match which will be called like a really strong match, it's going to be full of like the sports entertainment dress up stuff. It's going to be full of night one with the triple threat, that's going to be full of drama and acting and Heyman going, but who do I choose? Oh no. It's going to be full of that shit. The main event being John Cena and Cody Rhodes. Do you mean there's not going to be a moment where John Cena pauses and pulls a weird face trying to emote a reaction? it's absolutely bound for it. But I expect that I'm going to have a good time with it. The build has been so lackluster. There's been so much of just kind of just treading water till we get to the thing, to a point where when they were running through the card, that multiple times the crowd, whoever it was, Sacramento it was in California, there were so many matches that got like no reaction, even the one which would be targeted a bit more at their audience with the Rey Mysterio match, because it's got the El Grande Americano stuff, that also didn't get much of a reaction because that's just too right wing. it's one of those where I get the point they're trying to make, but the character's kind of backfired in that way, where it's you kind of have the negative with the writing that more than you do with the character being disrespectful of Grande Marikano. So that even that one with where Takamoto would be like the audience to test that in, even that one's not really worked. Penta's worked. Penta's over as hell. Rey Mysterio's over as hell. They're just not into the storyline, but they're really into Penta and everything to do with the Intercontinental Championship. They had that they could lean into. But overall, this build has been especially because I was never expecting it to get too last. Years because there is the competency thing where nowadays the bar for WWE is so much higher than it used to be, and even this, when I'm talking about it just being meh, it's still at a higher level than it has been in the past era. So we're still in that different bar, like that is absolutely fine. Like when I thought about just in terms of like WrestleMania stuff, just maybe it's all on Netflix, why don't I just go, like, try and put one on in the background or whatever, but especially this past era, just the production of it, I can't even watch them. Even my matches that I really loved, like the Gunther, Sheamus, Drew McIntyre triple threat, that's Kevin Dunn's last produced WrestleMania. It's just the camera work and production and everything, it's just so takes away from the experience so much that I have to be in the right frame of mind to be able to like get into it and watch it. WrestleMania 40 almost feels like a new starting point where I'm just able to just relax and watch WrestleMania is a lot easier. But yeah, I wasn't expecting these years to be anywhere near as strong. Because it's the end of a story versus almost the start of one, slash the aftershocks and the ripple effects from what happened last year. So it's a very, very different world. I'm not expecting it to hit that, but even the top matches just haven't hit that level of excitement that I kind of wanted to. The John Cena one's got the big issue that it feels like the start of John Cena's story rather than a huge potential end point for it. So be that he loses then goes back on a comeback revival over the course of the year, or he wins and he morally goes on a comeback revival over the course of the year, this feels like a starting point for a story which isn't about Cody. It's just somebody's got to, maybe John Cena holds a title SummerSlam, his redemption is literally just from SummerSlam to the end of the year. I joked in the chat that no, current political climate, John Cena should be acting villainous, get rewarded, face no consequences and just win. Goes off into the sunset, and on the final show of the year he just hands over the title, right I'm off, or goes off with it, and the crowd would cheer him. This WWE crowd, if he goes out there and he cuts a promo about, okay, this is the last one, off he goes, like they would cheer him. Like no question. No, the current version of the character as well, with no more work, they would just cheer it. I mean, at those prices he bloody would be, wouldn't you? Jesus Christ, dynamic pricing is horrific on the consumer. But anyway, enough rabbiting on. I'm just kind of like setting the mood in this final show. This is like semi going over the show slash semi preview for WrestleMania in the way that it's kind of constructed. It's not like a predictions kind of thing, but obviously you'll get my feeling towards the matches as I go through the segments. But yeah, a much, much colder WrestleMania build, ironically given it's going to be hotter because it's in Las Vegas compared to last year's pretty cold Philadelphia. But I'm expecting the shows themselves to be solid in that WWE spectacle sports spectacular kind of way. The actual matches they've got on the card, like bar a couple, like it generally feels like it's going to be an entertaining show, relatively easy watch and fun shows. It's just in terms of like the heavy hitters and in terms of the build, the actual quality of the shows and the build up as well. Like last year we had The Rock and all the, and every time there was a Rock appearance, he then had the after effects of it with the whole Cody thing. And of course it's the ending of a story. So as these shows build up to it, they're building up that excitement, that anticipation for what's going to happen at WrestleMania, the whole building up of that 2-night thing. And then this year's just kind of been, this year's felt a lot like trying to just get to the date of WrestleMania. It's kind of spinning their wheels for so many feuds. Some of them found a home run starting to kind of run and win in the final few weeks. Shout out to Jey Uso, Gunter, which falls into that category. But Tiffany, Charlotte never really got going, just kind of spinning the wheels from week one almost, unfortunately. Even John Cena, Cody Rhodes, they had their back and forth talk stuff, but there wasn't really that much evolving past a certain point. That's arguably the most disappointed I have been. I also feel like it's a bit of a downside of stretching this out over the course of the year. This is the start of the John Cena story, so you're not going to get all this character work because it's setting up the character work for the rest of the year. So it's never going to feel like last year's like end of the story, because this is the start of one. Well, it's the start of an ending, to put it really. So anyway, let's jump on over to Seattle, Washington, talk about SmackDown. And let's get through one of the matches that had the biggest shakeup that isn't WWE's fault. Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens falling through. So let's jump on over to SmackDown in Seattle, the same week that The Last of Us Season 2 started to airing.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
You need my respect. Funny enough, Nick, you've got my respect. You earned it a long time ago. But if you don't deliver on a match for yours truly next week at WrestleMania 41, then I can't promise that I will apologize to Mickie James after I do what I'm gonna do if I don't get my match.
Randy Pandy bookended the show. He opened the show addressing Kevin Owens' sucky neck injury announcement, so bad that we're talking about KO being out for over a year, through next year's WrestleMania at least. So Aldis had called out Randy Pandy. Randy wanted to talk about the RKO from last week and what he is now going to be doing at WrestleMania. Randy already took ownership of the RKO and paid the fine. He needs this match for Las Vegas, because this is set to be his 20th time on the WrestleMania stage. But bringing up Aldis' wife, Mickie James, was perhaps a mistake from Orton's part. No fear, Solo Sikoa technically has free time with his WrestleMania story revolving around Jacob Fatu's United States Championship Challenge. Orton's response grand enough, feeding off the fact that it's no secret that thanks to Owens he has all this pent-up aggression. LA Knight made the save, and this is an episode of Smackers, so into the main event, LA Knight and Orton versus Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga. A perfectly alright telly-main. Like, a lot of this show, not going to particularly remember it, but it was fine enough. Passed the time, didn't it? Like, we're all just whittling away the hours until the inevitable end calls for us all. So with a review like that, it's fair to say I was happy that there was only going to be 7 minutes on the clock when the bell rang. The crowd got to get their RKO pop before Randy walk and brawled with Solo into the crowd in a very, oh, is that the replacement? All right, and leaving poor Tama in the ring for a BFT. Going off air with Jacob Fatu making his statement after the bell. Corner charge and two pop-up moonsaults before he held up the United States Championship. So in one corner, we've got, oh, is Solo the replacement for Randy? He's like, ah, well, that's a bit of a downgrade. Not even done in an exciting way. He just is. Unless he's being taken off the card and something else has been put on, which I don't think they're good because of the whole Randy Orton 20th anniversary thing. But Jacob Fatu, white hot, and his card on the Monday Night Raw rundown also got a hot reaction as well. The crowd want to see Jacob Fatu crowned and started to be elevated. And they've been bubbling the pot now. They've been bubbling it really well through the end of last year, through this WrestleMania season. The entity that is Jacob Fatu has been bubbled up really nicely. Now is the type to start to actually go with him and to really test him out, give him that United States Championship, see how he goes. It feels like, at the moment, like it's going to go incredibly well. You might have even just been worth just shooting him up to the... you can't really shoot him up to the main event scene because there isn't currently room for him in the other stuff that's going on. And the last thing you want is for him to cool down after just getting like a big push and go whatever. So just keep bubbling him up, but give him a championship. Actually see elevation for him. But the big note is that Kevin Owens, unfortunately, injured for a really long time, needing a surgery and going to be out for a while. Apparently, still not had it. But with Randy, he leaves Randy Orton out in the cold, and this is his 20th year for WrestleMania. When he does this one, that's his 20th WrestleMania. So for it to fall through right at the end, obviously, like, sucks for him as well. Obviously, not the same level of suck, but it's irritating for him. So I guess Solo Sikoa is a replacement, but there's nothing there. There's no heat, no animosity. It'd just be a match. Personally, I probably would have turned it into some form of showcase match. You could even do like a surprise opponent thing just to generate something, and you could bring in an NXT star or somebody, or Aleister Black. Oh no, because you want Randy Orton to win. We see my point. There's so many more interesting things you could do. I mean, does Rusev need to win? Rusev coming back facing Randy Orton, that could be nice. You could have done a mystery opponent surprise thing, and there are people set to come back, so why not just pull one of them into a WrestleMania for a nice moment? Instead, we're getting a very tepid, oh, okay, right, and kind of replacement. This is, yeah, that's a shame. Anyway, they could change it on Friday. They got this final SmackDown to go. I doubt it, though. I highly doubt it. Speaking of WrestleMania places, this is where we got the Women's Tag Team Championship Gauntlet match, winner facing Liv and Raquel at WrestleMania. This took up a nice chunk of time, didn't it? The way it started, I was almost convinced this was going to be over in done like 20 minutes, but the final pairing got some time to stretch us out into the end. Don't get too carried away. Like, I won't remember anything about this match come next week's recording, but right here, right now, it sure did pass 30 to 40 minutes on an episode of SmackDown. So first off, the Women's Intercontinental Champion Lyra Valkyrie and Bayley, fresh off of their match on Monday Night Raw, started off against Stark and Baszler, who are now Sonya Deville-less after her release in WWE's latest firing window. Of all up, got Bayley and Lyra through them quick enough. Natalya and Maxxine Dupri, no notes, it literally just nothing happens until the roll-up. Natalya and Maxxine Dupri was a very pink, very blonde, different kind of match for the serious MMA-coded lasses from before. Maxxine didn't really know how to put the sharpshooter on properly, but that was in character, it was purposeful. Done with Bayley just hooking her leg and rolling her up quick too, and that's why I was like, oh god, we are rattling through these. This is going to be done in like a gauntlet match in like 10 minutes, kind of shit. The Party Girls out next as we rattled through the teams in a record time of unimportance. Carter and Chance, the first two characters to actually get a strong run of reactions out of the tepid Seattle crowd. They're pretty tepid all night, to be fair. Part of it hits because of the hot European crowd. They come back to America and it's woo, yay. What is this shit? Come on, America. You're paying out your ass for these dynamic pricing tickets. Come on. Party Girls' run also came to a quick end after a nice flow between Katana and Lyra. Nightwing for the win, and the established as friends 2 weeks ago for the Naomi and Jay storyline duo, Mia Yim and B-Fab, came out before the ad break. After the break, Rose Plant from Bayley to B-Fab ended that one, and Piper Niffin and Alba Fire outlast. I'm gonna write Alba Fire because I just refused to learn her NXT name, and now that she's here to stay, he's like, okay, I've just been calling you Kaylee Ray. I need to learn your NXT name generated name here. So Alba Fire, Alba Fire. It's not as bad now that it's not associated with the spooky, spooky gimmick with Isla Dawn, like Dawn and Fire. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, it's not associated with that now, it's just the name of the thing. So I'm not having as big a reaction. But they were outlast. Not the deadliest gauntlet run with this ending bout coming, like, we're 15 minutes in and we're already at the final pairing. But this pairing did get time. And this was also the pairing that got an actual crowd reaction. This is awesome, but really, it read as the crowd finally caring. Big strong at Lyra, elbow dropping Bayley, and Niven kicked out at one. Piper held Bayley on top of her in a straight jacket so Fire could fly in with a swanton. That was lovely. Flowing into Niven taking a ringside powerbomb bump on a random smackers in Seattle. Poor Kaylee all alone as Bayley hit the rose plant and Valkyria followed up with a top rope leg drop. It had a name, it began with P. Didn't know what it was, and I haven't been watching NXT really since 2.0. But yes, they win. Bayley and Valkyria get their WrestleMania stage moment against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez in a match which screams, we haven't got anything for Bayley, we haven't got anything for the mid-card women's champions, and Liv and Raquel need challengers, so we'll do something there, we'll do something. At least they did a build-up to Bayley and Valkyria having their match. At least the duo were on television together quite a bit. He saw them backstage having segments, then he saw them obviously having their match, so at least the pairing have physically been on TV together. So it's still kind of thrown together, but it's not as thrown together as we've seen like in past stuff. This isn't the pirate ship rain and wet WrestleMania. It really was thrown together, their women's tag team match. The one where poor Mandy Rose slips on a bum-bum. It's like, it was raining. These are very unique circumstances. But yeah, a gauntlet which filled up some time. It's fun enough. At least the final pairing got some time, so it didn't just finish within like 20 minutes. It actually got stretched out a bit. And the final thing I want to kind of talk about, Cody Rhodes. Cody cut a promo with past WWE championships on display in the ring with him, making it about more than just his legacy as champion, but that of the history and future John Cena wants to take away from everyone at WrestleMania. Finally, having the comeback to Cena's "Your neck tattoo just shows you as a common fan" line from back in London. As he went through each title talking about the way he dresses himself is not because he thinks he is somebody, but because he wants to be somebody. Talking about what the character holding each iteration of the belts represented, which is a kind of nice touch, which means he eventually gets to the spin about and talks about John Cena in a respectful way, which then transitions into, "But now you're being a son of a bitch." Kind of promo from Cody Rhodes. But I was joking. Like, if you're going to actually, you know, do a commentary on the political climate, John Cena should win. John Cena should face no consequences. John Cena should then just go off into the sunset nice and rich. With nothing at all. What's the long-term storyline for Cody in that scenario? I don't know. He or also goes down a spiral and just, I don't know, embraces the Republican that he is. Just fully goes into it. To be fair, that's almost the... It's almost me pitching the Homelander story, I guess, in a way. Just falls right into it. It's like, oh, there's no escaping it. Just the Cody Rhodes Homelander story, it does have potential. But I'm saying it in a jokey way, where he gives up all of this positivity stuff and just ends up being as corrupt as everybody else. but not in a character that's going to face any comeuppance kind of way. He's still meant to like him as a character. He's still the babyface in this scenario. He doesn't get any reward from John Cena. He just gets the belt back. Bullshit. Bullshit like that. But yeah, this Cody storyline with John Cena, it's just that it's nowhere near as hyped as I felt like it could have been, especially with the angle that they did at the end of Elimination Chamber. Like, what's come afterwards just hasn't been to that level of hype at all. We had, like, the building of the intrigue with the start of the John Cena character, but it's almost just stayed at that level. Like, when I was expecting it to ramp up and really get into that white-hot kind of atmosphere right before the shows, in those final building weeks, it's just never elevated past that point of building the intrigue for the match. I've never reached that point of just feeling the animosity between Cody and John Cena. It more feels like you understand their differences and what they're both going in for this match, with both their characters, what they're both trying to accomplish by winning. But that animosity just isn't there. It was taken to an extreme height last year, but the John Cena promo, the first time we saw him in Europe, was like, okay, this is a great baseline. We've got more explanation since then, so we understand more, but that animosity just hasn't built. It's just at that same level. So it's like, oh, intrigue. And it stayed there. It's never got like, heightened past it. And onto the other notes. I don't know if it was the mixing or what, but at times Seattle were almost like a Japanese crowd with their subdued atmosphere and polite clapping. The difference being, in Japan, the crowds get louder as the in-ring action progresses, rather than, ugh, what's this wrestling thing? Oh, give me the promo segments, please. Chelsea Green was against Zelina Vega. The match finally happened and showed Green without her Scottish protectors. It just ended in an accidental countout, earning Vega a title match in result. Rey Fénix's second showcase was against Legado de Fantasma's Bird. This one felt a lot more composed to the WWE style than last week's match. Speaking of showcases, Tiffany Stratton faced NXT's Roxanne Perez. Charlotte, in her comfy wear, jumped after the match, looking like she was in a Limp Bizkit video as they went into last week's happening with Barrett standing between Flair and Stratton after the champ was thrown over the announce desk. You're gonna get fired! I'm trying to help ya! Captured by the camera pics. That's not a Preston accent at all, but the Americans won't be able to tell the difference. So it's fine. Wade even calling Charlotte the unprofessional Charlotte Flair for the card rundown afterwards. Like, okay, so that's what they're leaning into afterwards. It's just screams the Super Eye Patch Wolf folding reality back on itself with the wrestling stuff. But whatever they're trying, it's not worked. Because in the crowd rundowns, both here and on Raw, their graphic got such a little reaction. The crowd aren't going, oh, so this is kind of becoming her character now, like the unprofessional Charlotte Flair, like this is becoming kind of a, like they meant it all along, she's all just part of the character. They've folded, again, folding reality back into the show. But it's not worked. The crowd aren't buying it. The end result is the crowd aren't invested in the match. It doesn't matter if you can go then afterwards just go, oh, well, we got one over on them, because actually, as you can see here, we're calling her the unprofessional Charlotte Flair, so it's actually just all part of her character. It wasn't like a segment falling apart or anything. You've actually just been worked. It's like, who cares? It's not worked. The crowd aren't excited for it. Who cares about all of the game playing when the crowd aren't invested? I mean, both are amazing wrestlers, and there's still that potential for the match to be great. Well, for all we know, they're just two people who, doing a long program together, is going to be an issue going forward. However, actually in the ring, because they're both great, there could be something there. As I said last week, very concerned when I was watching one of the dance partners just leave her partner astray and just stop dancing. There's one thing where it's a promo segment and one thing where it's a wrestling thing. I'm not, and of course they've had the time in between to smooth things out. And here, obviously, there was a physicality to their segment. Like, it's all right. But likelihood is, my expectation is things got sorted and this segment, at least at this point, is now trying to just get everything back on track and try and at least use what happened last time and that fan sentiment now to try and create something new for the Charlotte character. I can't deny it, it's something new for the Charlotte character. It's just that this match hasn't got that kind of fire behind it. The crowd were not reacting whenever it showed up on the title cards. Only bettered by AJ and the transphobe getting nothing from Cali on Raw. When they showed that graphic, basic silence. It is insane. I don't know what happened in their segment, because I wrote my notes on AJ versus Karrion Kross, and then when it moved on to hyping the match for WrestleMania, I just skipped it. Like, no, I just don't want to talk about it. Eye Patch Drew McIntyre jumped Damian Priest during the man's entrance. Always funny when WWE plays Static Fuzz on a screen after a lad gets thrown into it. That's not how that works. Like, nope, it's you're just playing a different video package. That's just a different video file. That's not how it works. Arguably, Roxanne Perez's entrance video, where she's also got like static with her name over the top, which just means on the part of the barricades, it's just static stuff. That looked way more realistic as actual static than the video file they played. Drew cut a wee promo on his WrestleMania opponent in the ring after. Off came the eye patch reveal for his full clearance for Las Vegas reveal. Me, what I'm going, boo, you're robbing me of my WrestleMania pirate entrance. Things he could have done with the Scottish pirate. Just nah. Now, they don't have the balls that AEW did. They went full pirate John Moxley. They went full Solid Snake. They went full into it. Didn't do the reveal until you're actually in the ring. Like, nah. They wimped out of it. Naomi got another great-to-camera VTR play, this time paired with one of Cargill 2 in a neat little video package. As I've said, I've got all the drama set up for that one. Storyline-wise, absolutely fine. This is absolutely fine just to do a video package and go into WrestleMania itself. Just don't cut them too short on time. I'm worried. It's got a great story, and it's a huge like first-time moment. But there's a lot of matches on these cards, and WWE don't normally do these long shows, so unless WrestleMania is going to be longer both nights than I'm expecting, I feel like some matches might get shortchanged a bit. Speaking of shortchange, the tag team scene. DIY set to call foul on the exposed turnbuckle finish to the number one contenders match last week. What I thought was getting us nice and primed for a multi-man ladder matchy type of thing at WrestleMania, but instead, the Street Profits are just defending on SmackDown. Or is this what it's currently set to be? And again, when Street Profits were interviewed by Cameron, it's worth watching the clip, because you can see that Dawkins does his best, but yeah, just it's just so trying to do their best to answer for something that they know. They know why they're not on the card. But there's just, when you go outside of the WWE bubble, and for me that's what happened on this press day, WWE chooses who goes into their post-show press stuff for a reason. It's because when you actually go outside of the bubble, they don't care about WrestleMania, they care about the sex trafficking. They care about your company has personal ties to the Trump administration. They care about that shit. You go to Vanity Fair, they care about actual things that actually matter. Trying to sell your storyline from WrestleMania, they couldn't give less of a shit. You get asked actual questions, which is why WWE doesn't want those kinds of people in their post-scrum stuff. They want people just going to ask about storylines, are going to ask about how good it is to be you, to just continue building that hype wheel. They don't want an actual press scrum. And on WrestleMania Smackers next week, John Cena says hello, there's the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and as I was just talking about, the WWE Tag Team Championship match with the Motor City Machine Guns challenging Street Profits. There's always a chance for a kerfuffle kind of thing to set up a last-minute WrestleMania match, a multi-man type of thing. Because they've got all of that going on. They've got Street Profits, they've got the Guns, they've got DIY, they've got Pretty Deadly. They're all there. They've all been set up. And for weeks I've been saying, this screams ladder match. You've done all the work. Yes, you did it last year, but you're the one that built it this year to this. That's kind of where we've got to. Maybe even putting the cars together, they realise there's just too many matches and stuff needed to get cut. It just, continues the streak that's currently going of male black performers not existing on pay-per-view. Anyway, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw for Sacramento, California for the continued run. This time in the main event, we return to Seth Rollins, CM Punk and Roman Reigns for their storyline. I watched the 1 hour 44 minute edited version. Fuck your 3 hours. Did you hear how much shorter my version was? Also, not a lot notes wise. A very damp final Raw before WrestleMania, especially compared to last year's hot fire. So anyway, we're jumping over to Monday Night Raw, Seth Rollins and The Chair.
Oh no! Rollins! With a Shield chair! Deja vu! Eerily reminiscent of the chair to the back that disintegrated the Shield forever.
The three lads all in the ring to end the show again, in the garage going full drama, acting already for Heyman being torn between his obligations. This night one main event is going to be just full of that shit, isn't it? Absolutely full of Heyman faces and drama pause moments. Notes like, Roman grabbing his own mic as the wise man gawks in reaction, ready to be translated into its in-match variant at WrestleMania. Roman slowly getting to the point as the other two lads waited their turn to come out. Same order as always, with Seth Rollins out second, CM Punk third. Seth with a cutting jab about the business dying if people like Punk get to do as they like, positioning himself as the kind of hard-working wrestler WWE thrives on. Favours don't happen by chance, favours are a choice. Using last week to prove his point, he's not expecting anything from Heyman because the man has made a choice to return Punk's favour. He's chosen him over Roman. Reigns had none of Seth and launched him into the ring post before pushing Heyman to the mat, which, seems about the right time for the Chicago man to run on down, doesn't it? No promo from Punkerton, we just went straight into the ass kicking, into the action we expected, but at least they went for an angle instead of a full brawl. Like, we've had enough brawls, chaps. It's fine. Yes, normally you do a big brawl, and that's kind of how you end the program on hot. But they've done so many brawls in the earlier stages to heat it up that now it would be a bit too repetitive. It's kind of redundant. So going with an angle at the end instead. Yes, you would normally have that earlier on and you escalate into a brawl, but they started white hot eating each other, and they've kind of died down a little bit, and now they understand their differences, but their differences are keeping them apart. So there must be this match. They can understand why people going into WrestleMania just feel like there isn't that same level of heat and animosity. It was like, well, yeah, this is like, in terms of the pacing of the story, this was white hot like a month ago. In terms of the characters in there, just the apex of the feud, it was weeks ago where they were actually at that point constantly brawling with each other. Now they've got all their differences, and their differences are all out there. They've all been understood. They've all been taken in. So it's at a different point. It's not, for me, it's not like a super negative, but I can understand why people might be questioning why they're not as hyped. Like, well, the pacing of the story, you're at a lower point in terms of the peaks and the valleys, like keeping the momentum of a story. We're going into WrestleMania not at a peak. Like, it's still done competently. It's still told competently. Just momentum and pacing wise, it hasn't been. Spear from Roman positioned him nicely for Seth to swing the steel chair in a shot stage the exact same as the Shield breakup. Going off air with Heyman gawking again, this time with a little fear as Seth stood tall. Like, sure, why not? He's never winning, so why not give him this night? And the only other segment I want to talk about, Gunther and Jey Uso. The World Heavyweight Champion opened the show, interviewed in the ring by Michael Cole, using him as the vessel to bring up his loss at last year's WrestleMania to the forefront. The whole promo framed as Gunther being frustrated as we near the big stage. Jey's response last week used to position the challenger as having got one over the champion. He's got to him. A restating of confidence. Gunther not lost any control, he's the greatest champion and all of that. Commentary afterwards selling the reaction as a clear sign Gunther is indeed frustrated, which leads into Jey Uso later in the show, who brought back the yeet. We're seeing him in full Jey Uso once again ahead of WrestleMania. He was trying to dance through the crowd with an expression of intensity before standing up on the announce desk with the crowd behind him. Compared to Gunther, whose announce desk promo a few weeks back was filmed with the ring behind him. Little details like that always used to be missed, underdone, but here, for me, that's good stuff. You saw Gunther that promo, stood on the announce desk with him behind him. The next week is a Jey Uso attack. The next week is a Jey Uso response. The week after that, you get the shot with Jey Uso with the crowd behind him. It's just nice. It's just neat and tidy in a nice little bow. Played as a complete contrast of confidence and motivation. Before Jey just then disappeared back through the crowd and did more yeeting. Like, the actual content of his promo was, I said everything last week. I haven't got anything else to say. I'll build up a little hype, but there's literally nothing more for me to say. I'm just wasting time here. I might as well just go and dance and nothing. I might be paraphrasing, but pretty much what he says and does. But it did enough to kind of keep the momentum going, because this wasn't the hot heating point of the match. It was almost the calm before the storm, the way this one was played. Like, it doesn't feel like that's a negative compared to the triple threat. That one felt like they hit the peak of that too, like a little too long ago, whilst this feels more like they heated it up just in time, because there was nothing going for this. I was talking about this and the Flair Stratton match as just feeling so similar that they didn't really have anything for it. Then we basically got like a 4-week run after say a nice little bow, which is ending the lovely little mirror image at the end of it, and suddenly this match is so much more heated. They've done a really good job in getting the crowd behind Jey Uso. They were already behind him, and it almost felt like there was that thing of, ah, why try, because you're going to get the Jey Uso pop anyway. Then in the last 4 weeks they tried, and it's worked incredibly well. And immediately into the other notes is what I meant by, like, this was a Monday Night Raw, and I saw the time when I was starting Raw, my own recording, and I was like, oh god, this is going to go long, but I've got nothing to say about this show. Those two things, everything else is nothing. Someone in the crowd held up a sign reading, "This financially ruined me." Like, why are we smiling about that? Like, have some worth. Come on, WWE fans. Just happy to have your fandom exploited by dynamic pricing like that. Come on, you have value. The women's tag team champions Liv and Raquel came on out for Liv to wrestle one half of their WrestleMania challenges in Bayley. Standard tag booking, fair, with the challengers winning, and we move on with the show. Rich Latter called it back in what, October? Was it like August even? Like SummerSlam time? Just, this is the exact position we thought Liv was going to be in. Ray Ray got one hell of a warm hometown welcome by California for his match with Julius Creed. Like, if anything, a grand little singles match for the sure prospect in Creed. This was to set up El Grande Americano attacking after the bell with the loaded mask. Speaking of warm welcomes, AJ Styles, the respected lad, had a wee tussle with Karrion Kross in a hair straightener showcase. Of course, his hair was simply just too wet. Like, hardly a contest. Hardly a contest. Why did he put that much conditioner in it just to wet it before the match? Let it flow. He did not find a hair dry. Look at AJ's. Look at AJ's. I guess this was setting up a Mania match, but like I said earlier, I don't want to talk about it. Intercontinental champion Bron Breakker was attacked backstage by the Judgment Day lads right before Penta versus Finn. This time, the numbers didn't get to work against the Lucha Brother. Bron, with entrance music during the match, walked on right into at the point of the coup de grace climb. Big cheer for the double spear on Carlito and Dom. Loud for Penta's Breakker fight back too. Gave California the luchador standing tall in the end, which was a good decision. He's gonna cheer him the loudest. And finally, the World Tag Team Championship match between War Raiders and New Day got confirmed to the WrestleMania stage. First off, good. Actually do something with Woods and Kofi. Also, why aren't the Street Profits on the WrestleMania show? They've had the much better built story. Well, in terms of they've actually had one. War Raiders and Kofi and Woods has felt like something that's been a TV bubble. That's been the level of a build which feels like it should be on TV. Whilst the SmackDown side has been the one that's actually bubbled like a pay-per-view kind of level of just chaos and amount of teams going on and everything. Like, the World Championship build for felt like nothing. I've almost depressingly and pessimistically just been like, they're not going to do anything with the New Day, even though they've been doing great stuff with them personally. They've been given nothing. They've had nothing for them. The turn was basically pointless because they had nothing for them once they had turned. The turn was good, but they didn't have anything planned for it afterwards. So there was no reason to do it. Why have you done it? I mean, the reason to do it is to keep the act interesting, to build up that. But there was nothing planned afterwards, so why did you turn them? Aside from the basic stuff of just refreshing the act. Like, in terms of actual different dynamics and things, that, you know, why did you turn them when you had no plans for them? Anyway, yeah, they're going to be wrestling at WrestleMania. Somehow, when I've enjoyed their work, but they've had nothing for them, they somehow got a place on the card with a build that felt like a TV build. Yes, yeah. There is still time for the Street Profits to make the WrestleMania card, but it just feels like that's one of the things that's just being cut because there's already so many matches. Anyway, just like Seth Rollins was saying earlier, it's a choice. You've made a choice to do this. So, yeah. And now, time for you to face the consequences through a steel chair. I've not talked like Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, and Io Sky. Whenever that match graphic came up, such loud reactions. Now, I was saying that I was super hyped for the match, even though the build itself has been very strange. It always felt like so by the numbers and how to throw together a championship triple threat type of thing that I've just not really been that invested in it. And especially with Rhea Ripley, where the beats her character need to do for the plot didn't fit her character in terms of why they would do them. And you've kind of flip-flopped from week to week in terms of what Rhea Ripley's character would actually do in these different scenarios. But what I can't lie is the match itself is screaming that it's going to be something good. And I'm generally very excited to see what that match turns out to be. I've got such high hopes for it. Whoever's agenting it, please give them time to let this flow. Don't let this be one of the matches that gets cut down to like 10 minutes or so and then it's just fine. Like, no, let this flow. Judging how the bills have gone by the reactions of the crowds as the cards came up, that was one of the loudest ones every time. I want to say in California it was the loudest reaction. They also weren't on the show, so those were like the pops for seeing their faces. But yeah, John Cena Cody didn't even get that, but obviously that's like the last match being announced and they've gone way a few too many times. Like, California has their limits. They very much were like, we're going to pick our couple, we're going to cheer for them, it's Penta and it's the women, nobody else gets anything. But there were some matches that very, very like evidently got very little reactions, be it AJ Transphobe and Flair Stratton got like nothing. It's like, oh, that's quite telling in terms of just not being able to twist the reality back on itself quite well enough. Anyway, next week, the big WrestleMania review, because about this time last year, Combo Fest still was doing NXT. I definitely wouldn't edit as much of the shows as I do nowadays. WrestleMania was the first time, that was the changing point where I decided, like, no, I can do this. Oh, I can do it this way, and I found like a format to make the pay-per-views feel a bit more special if I edit them in a certain way. So anyway, yes, next week, the big WrestleMania shows. So I'll be doing WrestleMania Night 1, WrestleMania Night 2, and the Raw after WrestleMania, all in one show next week on Smackers. Sod the SmackDown, the SmackDown Mania, sod the Hall of Fame, the NXT, just like, no, no. Just a busy time, got stuff to do. So we'll see how things go. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it, never take it for granted. The newsletter, read the newsletter. We've got the newsletter. The first one is still out there if you want to go read that up. And Trish is working very, very hard on the second one. And also please do check out all the other shows here on the Social Suplex Network. Feels like we're in a really good place right now. So with that, I'll be back this time next week to watch the WWE show so you don't have to. But I feel like this week, that's not going to be the case. I've got a feeling that most people listening will have watched at least parts of it, be it the Raw after Mania, be it WrestleMania itself. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.